Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Mordecai Breenberg.
From a marketing point of view, you don't introduce new products in August. That was White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card who made that statement in September, and he was referring to the planned U.S.-UK war on Iraq. Well, now the U.S. and the United Kingdom have invaded Iraq, with tens of millions around the globe not believing their rationales. Laura Miller is Associate Editor of PR Watch in Madison, Wisconsin. She joins us today to examine the public relations campaign to sell the war. Hi, Laura, and welcome to Red Eye.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I quoted Andrew Card, the White House Chief of Staff. How do you interpret his statement?
Well, I think if you look at how the Bush administration announced its plans to do regime change, as they say, in Iraq. They announced that in September, so he was, it was going along with what Andrew Card said. They have the campaign to sell this war in Iraq has been planned for quite a while, and it was pretty much launched in September. And so what we've been seeing for the past few months is a very consistent, very well-planned effort on the Bush administration to convince the United States public to support it and the world in general, but really they need domestic support in order to do this invasion of Iraq, and, here we are.
Well, what do their standard PR strategies look like?
Well, they have a number of things going on. One of the things that is key is this Office of Global Communication in the White House. And what it does is it makes sure everyone who's part of the U.S. administration, from the White House to the Pentagon to the State Department, is basically delivering the party line for the day. They get a daily messenger, a global messenger email, and it has the day's talking points and some ready-to-use quotes. Part of what we know from studying public relations and crisis communication, as it's called, is that you want to tightly control the message and kind of dole out the information in a way that's beneficial to communicating your point of view, convincing public opinion of a certain thing. And that happens by, having a very tightly controlled, tightly delivered message so that everyone is on point, has the same speaking points for one day, and that's part of it. Another part of it is a key part of the White House PR strategy are the embedded reporters with the military troops, because they see that as a way to basically, keep the focus on the troops, on the military hardware and on the pyrotechnics, and keep it kind of personal while taking out some of the larger context and kind of limiting reporters' access to anything that might undermine the Pentagon and White House message.
Now, advertising is one of the offensive creations of American culture. How do the advertising techniques, is this politics just modeled on advertising methodology?
Well, this goes back, if we look at the history of the public relations industry, the modern public relations industry, it goes back to World War I in the United States when the president at the time, Woodrow Wilson, who was reelected on this campaign, he kept us out of war, meaning World War I. He had a changed course. He had to convince the United States public to enter into World War I. He created the Committee on Public Information, also known as the Creel Committee. Basically, what they did is came up with this very massive government-sponsored campaign to, propagandize to the public to convince them to go to war. And they used newspapers, academics, artists, and filmmakers to persuade the U.S. public to enter into World War I. Well, after the war was over, a lot of these propagandists went to work for the private sector, doing corporate public relations. And so it's kind of built over the years. But a lot of the techniques have been, around for 100 years. Part of it's, keeping the message focused. Another is just basically flooding the media with basically trying to dominate the media cycle. And we see that right now, just the massive influx of pundits and press releases and information coming from the White House. It's completely completely dominating the U.S. media for sure, and also probably the rest of the world, you know.
Now, at the center of this PR campaign is something called the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about them. What do they do?
Well, the role they're playing in this PR campaign is they're trying to appear as an independent third party, basically advocating for what the Bush administration is seeking to achieve in Iraq. Some might say what they are is basically a front group. They have very close ties to this organization called Project for a New American Century, which has very close ties to Lockheed Martin. So they're representing the interests of the weapons manufacturers, kind of in the most basic kind of way of looking at it. They're also, you know, the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq is made up of, you know, people with defense contractor ties, lots of people with former, Reagan officials, former the first Bush administration officials, retired generals. And what they're doing is basically making the rounds of talk shows, writing op-eds, and advocating for the Bush administration's push, you know, war in Iraq, and for the regime change. The phrase regime change has actually been credited to the Project for a New American Century. And they, in 1998, I believe, when they were founded, sent an open letter that's been signed by a number of top officials in the Bush administration that basically outlined this U.S. foreign policy plan in the Middle East. You know, part of it is getting rid of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. There are other elements to it. It's available. You can find these things on the web if you type in Project for a New American Century or visit our website at prwatch.org.
Now, you go ahead.
Oh, so I was saying that the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq was set up by this Project for a New American Century, and it's basically, you know, trying to appear, you know, putting forward all these guests for the different news shows to kind of, like, keep the administration's message going, to seem like they're independent and they don't have anything to they aren't, you know, doing it for self-interest. But really, you know, you have to scrutinize where all these sources are coming from and what kinds of connections they have to different corporations and that might profit from, you know, we have to really look at where these people are coming from. And I would say that of any guest or any person that the media has on, you should look and see where they're coming from.
Now, there's another group, I gather they go by the metaphor, the band that orchestrate a lot of media strategy for the war in Iraq. Who are they?
Well, the band is essentially the top spokespeople for the U.S. government. So you see, you know, Ari Fleischer, who you know, is the White House top spokesperson, and Tori Clark, who is a former she used to run the Hill & Knowlton office in Washington, D.C., Hill & Knowlton being a PR firm that was very active in persuading the U.S. public to support the first war in the Gulf. But she is the Pentagon top spokesperson. So you have the top spokespeople from the Pentagon, the State Department, the White House, getting together and having, you know, coming up with what the day's talking points are, coordinating with the U.K., you know, the top spokespeople in the Blair administration, so Alistair Campbell, talking to the top spokespeople and in the U.S. Central Command in Qatar. James Wilkinson is the person. So these are people who are very, very skilled public relations, you know, people. They know a lot about controlling media, controlling, like, releasing information, feeding it to media. They have very good contacts within the media. And so they're able to ensure this consistency of message. And the message that they're delivering is a message that, you know, one might call doublespeak, for example. When you listen to Bush talk, it's about coalition forces going in to liberate Iraqis. That is not how it appears, obviously, to the rest of the world. What they see are the United States and Britain invading a country. But it's very important to use terms like liberation and coalition because they have a different emotional response with the U.S. public. So they're able to frame this debate because the media, in the U.S. at least, use the same language. They aren't just reporting what the president said. They're using the president's language. So, you know, this is an operation to disarm Iraq. This is an operation to liberate the Iraqi people. That's what's coming out of the newscasters' mouths. And so already this debate has been framed in a much different way than the reality is, really.
Now, when you come to a press conference, and just recently Blair was visiting with Bush and they had a joint press conference, how does this strategy of ensuring consistency, of staying on the message, work, particularly when you may have different traditions between the some of the British press and the American press, who have been quite tame in terms of press conferences with people like Bush?
Ultimately, I'm not sure if it's going to work. It's a very, very hard thing, particularly in countries that believe they have a democracy, to insist on everyone saying the same thing and everyone falling in line. It's hard for me to say how that works. I mean, when you look at the U.S. press and compare it to the British press, you see the British press is actually, you know, much more willing to be skeptical of official sources and much more willing to report stories that that contradict official sources, that might be seen as kind of undermining the war effort. In the U.S., you're right, it is a very tame media right now, particularly the network television news media.
Now, one of the techniques, I gather, is called the hypodermic approach. That sounds... I know they're shooting up the world. I didn't know they're shooting themselves up, too. But anyway, what is the hypodermic approach?
Well, the hypodermic approach is basically a propaganda-type model of communication. When you talk about propaganda, what you're talking about is a carefully crafted message that is delivered to a target audience meant to influence how they think about something. If you contrast that to what a democratic model of communication is, in a democratic model, you assume everyone comes to the table as equals and everyone has something to contribute to a dialogue. With a hypodermic or propaganda kind of model of communication, it's a one-way flow. What's happening is this message is coming from the White House and it's flowing straight into the mass media, which has lent themselves very, very willingly to the delivery of this message. As we have seen, the Bush administration really has no interest in dialogue, in diplomacy even, although they say they use the word diplomacy. It's a different interpretation than what I think is commonly understood. It's not about dialogue. It's not about trying to reach compromise, sharing opinions. You know, if the Bush administration is hearing things, they are hearing things only to know how to respond to them, to keep pushing their message. So if concerns about civilian casualties are raised, humanitarian aid is raised, what they hear is that, oh, this is a point that we need to appear concerned about, basically. So you'll see the Bush administration now saying things about humanitarian aid and caring about civilian casualties. I would say this is a direct response to concerns that have been raised by the anti-war movement in the U.S. and throughout the world, but it's really meant to kind of put a stopper on some of these concerns in the U.S. and really, you know, keep the war effort, you know, keep the thing going, I guess.
One of their great difficulties, it seems to me, just as in terms of the shifting arguments they give, is that they have not focus sufficiently, though you say their strategy is ensuring consistency, they seem to put forward different rationales for their war making at different moments, and that have left people with some real uncertainty about that.
Correct. Ensuring consistency comes kind of on a day-to-day basis. That means everyone says the same thing one day, everyone says the same thing the next day, kind of hoping that the media, you know, has a short-term memory, the U.S. public has a short-term memory, and is not going to forget that they're contradicting what they said a week ago or something like that. So I kind of forgot where I was going. What was your question again?
Well, that they give different rationales all the time, and they've left a lot of people, maybe, I don't know about America, but certainly in other countries, quite confused and therefore quite distrustful of the rationales they continue to offer, because they shift all the time.
Right. It is very confusing. Sometimes smoke screens work to the advantage of the communicator. If you look at the corporate campaign around, climate change, for example, or even, you know, smoking and secondhand smoke. If you look what the tobacco company has done, or the petrochemical companies have done, it, part of it is to create this doubt in people's minds about something. You know, oh, well, I don't know that actually, there's actually doubt about whether secondhand smoke can be linked to cancer. There's actually doubt about whether or not emissions, you know, lead to climate change. It's another kind of strategy of smoke and mirrors. If you can't convince someone directly of something, maybe you want to cast, you know, some doubts, you know, create some confusion in their mind about what's really going on. That's another kind of technique. I think Americans are pretty confused about what's going on. You know, I was talking earlier with someone today, and according to a poll in the past couple months, you know, a majority of the people in the United States think that Iraq is actually connected to the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, when, you know, they actually think that they were Iraqis flying those planes, when that's not the case at all. But that kind of confusion, those kind of illusions, and the Bush administration and the pundits that support them have led people to make these connections in their mind, either through you know, outright lying, or what's more favored is this kind of misleading, you know, kind of suggesting certain things and letting people draw their own conclusions in a rather, you know, so they've been disingenuous, you know. But so there is all this confusion about what's true and what isn't true, and it's very difficult. I think it's very difficult if you're watching any sort of U.S. media that's mainstream to have any sort of idea about what's really going on, because so much of it is just repeating official sources and not being skeptical and not trying to verify things independently. It's a problem, and I'm not. It puts us in a very dangerous place as well, because the administration believes it has its the public's consent, the public's support to do something. The public doesn't even really know what it is they're consenting to, because there's this confusion and there is these things, these mistaken beliefs.
I've been speaking with Laura Miller of PR Watch, and you can visit their website and sign up for their weekly spin reports at www.prwatch.org.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.